from KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org. And URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com.
From Washington, D.C., this is a special edition of the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. I'm standing right now just across the street from the White House. It's Friday afternoon, and there are still workmen putting the finishing touches on some of the viewing stands that people will be sitting in when the inaugural parade goes by here. Early Sunday morning, I was here, and there were hundreds of soldiers, Marines, military marching bands, and mounted police doing a dry run for Monday's inaugural parade. My producer, Susie Racho, and I have spent the week in Washington taking the political temperature, talking to policymakers about issues like guns and immigration, and spending time with some of the newest members of California's congressional delegation. I have to say, they're a pretty impressive bunch, and we'll be hearing from some of them soon. I do remember 4 years ago, we were here then too, the incredible sense of anticipation here. Democrats especially were so eager to have a new president and first family in the White House. It does seem, well, different this time. More sober, or maybe more realistic about how much change is possible right now. I asked House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi about that. What happened to all the excitement of 4 years ago?
The second term is a second term. You can't be new again. It's a continuation. But I am impressed by the enthusiasm there is for the inauguration, and so many people are coming back for it. I never sort of gravitate toward cold weather, so the fact that so many people are coming is impressive. But this president is great. His resolve for the second term, his understanding of the need to take it to the people.
She's right. There are plenty of Californians heading here this weekend for the inauguration, and we talked with some of them before they left.
Hi, my name is Harriet Watson. I'm a teacher at Lolita Elementary School.
My daughter went to Obama's first inauguration, and even though I wasn't there, just hearing about it was so amazing. When I got this chance, I just jumped. I thought, I want to be there.
Brian Lovell, I'm with the Arcata School District. I'm going to the inauguration. We're taking 25 middle school kids to the inauguration here from Humboldt County so that the kids would have an opportunity to see history and be part of history.
My name is Val Dolcini. I'm the state executive director of the USDA Farm Service Agency in California, and I'm going back to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration with my wife and my 16-year-old son. And I think it's a great opportunity for him to celebrate our democracy and celebrate our Constitution and really see these things up close.
My name's Karen Andreessen, and I'm a school librarian. So I'm going with my husband, Eric, and my two sons. I volunteered a lot to re-elect the president and to be with hundreds of thousands of people who are all enthusiastic. You just can't get that experience from watching something on TV.
So my name is Anjali Shastri. I am a graduate student working on my PhD in immunology. I have a lot of hope for the next 4 years, and I have a lot of confidence in this president. He has continued to pledge support and funding for scientific research.
I'm Zetha Nobles. I'm a principal at Horace Mann School in San Jose. I'm taking my three children, Remy, Sade, and Faloran. I want my children to experience it, not just because it's their government, but because it's the inauguration of a black president, which is really important for them to see someone who looks like them.
You can hear more Californians talking about why they're heading to the inauguration at our website, californiareport.org. Visitors to Washington this weekend might need some help finding their way around the Capitol, and they're in good company. California's 53-member congressional delegation includes 14 freshmen, rookies, still getting moved into their offices. We sat down with some of them this week, including two who are physicians. Dr. Raul Ruiz surprised many by knocking off incumbent Republican Mary Bono Mack in the 36th Congressional District, running east from Palm Springs. Dr. Ruiz is the son of farm workers who, at the age of 17, knocked on neighbors' doors asking for money to help pay for his college education.
What made you want to come here? I mean, you could have done anything you wanted, and you were an ER doc you've got, as you know. We keep reading 3 degrees from Harvard. I mean, you're a special person. You could have had a lot of paths. Why did you choose this one?
Well, my whole life mission was to make life better for my community and where I grew up. And I saw that this country, including specifically the district with all the problems that we had, was going in the wrong direction. Things were just getting worse. And my father told me never to complain unless I was going to be part of the solution. So I ran for Congress so that I can affect population health and affect a population's well-being through policy.
When you're an ER doc and someone comes in with a heart attack or a stroke or a car accident or a gunshot, you do what you have to do and you get it done. You don't have to get approval. You don't have to go to committee. You don't need to lobby your colleagues. You just do it. Very different set of circumstances here in Congress. So how do you deal with that? What do you see as the difference? And do you have to change the way you did things from the way you did things in the hospital?
You're right. As an ER doctor, I'm used to making critical decisions at critical moments and working as a team. And one of the things that we don't do is we don't ask the patients which party they belong to. We see a problem and we fix it together and we fix it to the best of the ability for that patient. Patients are number one in the hospital. In Congress, people should be number one. The residents in my district are my number one priority, and I will be as vigorous in advocating for them as I was as a physician advocating for patients. And patience is something that I will need to learn to develop because as an ER doc, you know, in the hospital, when I see a critical patient, I tend to want things very fast for obvious reasons. Here, I'm going to push the envelope and get things done.
California's first congressional district in the northeastern corner of the state includes the cities of Redding and Chico. It runs north to the Oregon border and east to Nevada. Fourth-generation rice farmer Doug LaMalfa is the new representative there. The former Republican state senator is one of 9 former state legislators among the freshman delegation.
Talk about the differences, and not just between your hometown and here, but between, you know, Sacramento, California, and the district. You've only been here, of course, a few weeks, but, you know, what's the difference? What do you notice?
Well, as you would expect, the process is quite a bit different. The rules of the House, the way the bills are brought up and voted upon, does take some learning to walk through that. It was more clear, actually, how things worked in the state legislature with the rules of the House and how the measure would be brought up. That said, it's a whole different experience being in a group of 435 voting as a body that way. And then I guess on a bigger level, you have the decisions that we make are obviously of a national scope and even in many cases an international scope.
You are in the majority, unlike Sacramento, where if you were there now, you'd really be in the minority because Dems have a supermajority in both houses. What's the difference there? It's not a big majority that the Republicans have, but, you know, you're in charge.
Yes, it is. People were joking with me, like, boy, you hit the escape hatch button just in time, didn't you? But it's a majority in this House, yes. But when you look at it in context of the overall way government works here, you have 2 houses and the executive branch with the presidency. It's not such a wide majority that we're just going to be able to steamroll anything through here like what it does feel like in California.
What are your hopes for this first term? What do you want to go home at the end of this term and say you've done or not done?
Well, a lot of people would say with everything coming down the next 90 days, it's just survival. But, you know, we come in with huge challenges here. And as the speaker and others have told us, we're going to make decisions that are of major substance coming up. And I'm just looking forward to what the future holds here in being able to partly at least tackle these issues as they come along. It doesn't happen overnight, but we do the best we can and humanly possible every day, and I think that's all that we ask of anybody around here is do what you can.
The other physician in California's freshman class is Democrat Ami Barra. After losing to incumbent Republican Dan Lundgren in 2010, Dr. Barra tried again last year and won, narrowly.
Tell me, you've been here on the Hill working as a congressman for a few weeks. So what have you learned already?
You know, the highlight really has been getting to know my fellow freshmen in the 113th Congress. Yeah, they're a remarkable group of individuals, yeah, both Democrats and Republicans. I think we all come here knowing that we have a mandate to figure out how to work together and get things done. When I look at the Democratic freshmen, the 48 others that joined me, it's a remarkably diverse group. And when I look at our entire Democratic caucus, this is the most diverse caucus ever. We're a majority women and minorities in the caucus. And, you know, when you look at Congress overall, you do see this changing face of America.
And I think you're the third Indian American who has been elected to Congress, if that's correct, I think it is. And, you know, so what does it mean to you, as someone who is a first-generation Indian American?
Yeah, as the son of parents that immigrated here from India in the 1950s, I'm a lifelong Californian. My parents came here to, really build a life. So, getting sworn in and looking up at my father in the gallery, it means a lot.
What did you learn during orientation about, some of the Republicans, especially from California? There's a few, maybe three, I think.
Yeah, there's a handful. What I learned is, we all recognize the incredible honor that was just bestowed upon us to represent our country in the House of Representatives. We also recognize the immense responsibility. We may have differences of opinion. We may have different ideas of how we go about addressing the debt, the deficit, how we address issues like, keeping our communities safe, reducing gun violence. But we have the same goal and so forth. And if we can get to that level of respect, then we can at least have a civil dialogue.
Monday, the president will be sworn in. You'll be there. I don't know if your family will be there with you.
My wife and daughter will be here with me, yeah.
What would you like the president to say to the country? I mean, what do you think the country needs to hear?
We need to hear a vision of how we move forward. We're all ready for that leadership, and we're waiting for that vision of what the future looks like. I want to see that Kennedy-type moment when he said we're going to put a man on the moon, and, then we rallied around it and we made it happen. So tell us where we want to be in 4 years, in 8 years, and, inspire us. And we're ready to do the work to get there.
Freshmen Ami Bera and Raul Ruiz are both first-generation Americans, so they figure to be important voices on an issue President Obama promises to make one of his top priorities in the second term, immigration.
I mean, we've got husbands and wives that are separated for, half a decade. That's not acceptable. So we need to reform the system for the economy and for American families.
San Jose Democrat Zoe Lofgren sits on a House Judiciary Subcommittee where immigration will soon get a hearing. Lofgren is meeting with a Florida Republican behind closed doors, hoping to find common ground they can take to their House colleagues.
There's a policy reason for reforming the immigration laws. It's a mess from top to bottom, but now there's a political imperative on the Republican side.
President George W. Bush supported immigration reform, but was stymied by his own party. Republicans voiced strong objections to offering what they called amnesty for people who came here illegally. But the November election and Latino voters' overwhelming support for President Obama was a wake-up call for Republicans.
It's no longer a question of whether we're going to have immigration reform or not. That's been settled. Now we're just having a conversation of when and what does it look like.
Eliseo Medina is secretary-treasurer with SEIU, the union that spearheaded Mi Familia Vota, a nonpartisan effort to mobilize Latino voters in last year's election. Working with Spanish-language media, the campaign energized Latinos to vote in numbers much higher than many, including the Republican Party, expected. It cost Mitt Romney the election, and the SEIU's Medina says it was a political earthquake in Washington.
I have never, in my 47 years as an organizer, seen politicians change so quickly. I mean, they change on a dime.
This week, Republican Senator Marco Rubio, a rising star from Florida, told talk show host Bill O'Reilly his ideas for addressing illegal immigration.
You have to come forward. You have to be fingerprinted, background check for national security and crimes. You have to pay back taxes. You have to pay fines. You have to have been here for a significant period of time, know English, and be assimilated. And if you do all of those things, what you get is a work permit, basically, a legal status, not a green card, to allow you to be in this country legally and to work.
Congressman Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney's running mate, endorsed Rubio's approach, saying the time for immigration reform is now.
Medina cut his organizing teeth with farm worker and activist Cesar Chavez. And now it's agriculture groups pressuring Republicans to act. Ken Barbic, director of government affairs for the Western Growers Association, says a California Farm Bureau survey of farmers found how dire the labor situation is.
60% of respondents across commodity groups said that they had experienced worker shortages, 70% in more labor-intensive fruit and vegetable operations.
Barbic's group endorsed Romney for president. He, too, sees the Republican Party's urgency for moderating its message on immigration.
They're finally saying, hey, we need to address this in a rational way, or else we're going to continue to be alienating a group of potential voters who would agree with the Republican Party on most other issues.
But just how far will Republicans go, especially on the critical issue of citizenship? Emboldened by the November election results, Democrats and their allies will insist on nothing short of offering full citizenship for people who came here illegally. Republicans may balk at that. Freshman Republican Doug LaMalfa represents the 1st Congressional District in far northern California around Redding and Chico. The fourth-generation rice farmer feels the U.S. has sent mixed signals to immigrants, toughening up the border but allowing them to work if they sneak in. LaMalfa seems to be open to a middle ground solution.
The public picture of a mass deportation is not going to happen, okay? It's not going to work. It's not practical. It'd be very ugly and not what we're about.
But LaMalfa says an immediate or easy path to citizenship would be a slap in the face to those who came here legally. He acknowledges that his party must compete with Democrats for Latino votes, especially in places like California. On the other hand,
if they think we're going to become the benefit party, the one, you know, giving away the treasury, then we can never outdo the Democrats on that, you know, because A, we shouldn't, and B, if we propose something, that the Dems can double it.
The issue of citizenship may be the toughest nut to crack. Freshman Democrat Raul Ruiz, the ER doc whose parents were migrant farm workers in the Coachella Valley, says anything short of full legal rights just isn't good enough.
Because then it's saying, you know, we want you to work in our low-paying, high-risk, dangerous jobs, but you can't become a citizen.
While solving the problem won't be easy, it does seem the political stars are aligning in Washington, making this the best chance of enacting comprehensive immigration reform in more than two decades. The District of Columbia has a booming population. In fact, last year, D.C. grew faster than every state except North Dakota. And Washington is full of transplanted Californians. As Jacob Fenston reports, for some, it can be hard to say goodbye to the Golden State.
Frontier poet Joaquin Miller spent much of his life adventuring across the wilds of Gold Rush, California, and writing about it. But for a few years, starting in 1883, he lived here, off 16th Street in Washington, D.C., where he built himself a tiny, rustic log cabin, a replica of one he'd lived in Shasta County. By 1911, Miller's cabin was in the path of progress as the city grew, and it was slated to be torn down. But a group of fellow Californians got together enough money to save it, moving the cabin log by log to Rock Creek Park, a few miles away.
Yes, so it was dismantled and it was moved into the park and it was dedicated in June of 1912, and at that time it was open to the public.
Simone Monteleone with the National Park Service. Now, the cabin is kind of forgotten.
Other than a lot of cobwebs, it's empty, no furniture or nothing.
But the group of Californians that helped relocate Miller's cabin is still going strong. The California State Society. It's a sort of social club to help connect Californians living in D.C.
My name is Patrick Ahrens, and I work for Congresswoman Janice Hahn from Los Angeles.
And my name's Claire Weil, and I work for Congressman Paul Tonko from upstate New York, but I'm a California native.
I met Ahrens and Weil at the California State Society holiday party in December. It was the latest of the group's almost monthly social events where people can reminisce about home and network at the same time.
It's just a chance for Californians to all come together wherever you are in D.C., come together as, you know, the California diaspora, the displaced Californians all here in the nation's capital.
It's definitely a home away from home. It's hard to move 3,000 miles away from your home state.
Last winter was my first winter, and it was relatively mild, a lot of people said. You know, we didn't get a lot of snowfall, but I didn't think I was going to survive because it went below 30.
Absolutely. And as Californians, we're not taught to drive in the snow.
California has the largest congressional delegation in Washington, which means hundreds of Californian staffers on Capitol Hill. Then there are all the people who work for California companies or nonprofits. But moving to Washington isn't always the easiest transition, and it's not just the weather. Lauren Wilson moved here 3 years ago for a job as a lobbyist, which she loves, but she had a little bit of culture shock. The State Society gatherings helped her feel more at home here.
I very much miss Oakland and the Bay Area. It's a really hard place to leave, and D.C. is a really hard place to get used to.
In the Bay Area, she says, everyone is just more accepting.
People just don't think twice about how people are dressed or different kinds of relationships, and here it's very, very straightforward, very traditional, very vanilla.
And yet, Washington has a way of sucking people in. Jennifer Poulakidas, a State Society board member, moved to Washington to work in Nancy Pelosi's office, thinking she'd be here for a couple of years. She stayed for 20. But
anytime someone asks me anywhere I am in the world, where are you from? I say I'm from San Francisco. I happen to live in Washington, D.C. right now, but I'm from San Francisco. And in my mind, I will be getting back there at some point.
Many Californians living here, myself included, say they're moving back eventually. Claire Vile at the State Society holiday party told me Californians typically only last 5 years in Washington.
Because we're not as tough, maybe, as the people who grew up on the East Coast. We hold open doors and say thank you and please.
Back in the 1890s, Joaquin Miller didn't even last 5 years. Like many people, he'd been drawn to Washington by ambition, angling for a political appointment. When it didn't pan out, he packed up and headed back to the Bay Area. There, he built another house in the Oakland Hills in what's now Joaquin Miller Park. For the California Report, I'm Jacob Fenston.
Earlier this week, a Santa Cruz painter boarded a train in Emeryville, starting a 3.5-day journey to Washington, D.C. for President Obama's inauguration.
Well, there's a history of taking trains to the inauguration. I believe it started with Abraham Lincoln, and I believe President Obama did for his last inauguration.
4 years ago, artist Andrew Perchin was perched on the National Mall with his easel and oil paints as Barack Obama delivered his first words as President of the United States.
What I painted was the people actually listening really reverently to the inauguration proceedings, and it was the most amazing moment of my life thus far, I would say.
The result, an impressionistic oil painting near the Washington Monument, capturing the throngs of people who turned out to witness history.
You know, the way people can be from a distance, they become little candy, little tiny candy sprinkled on a cake. And then up close, these beautiful people just in the moment of their lives. It was really incredible, the first black president.
Perchin is back this year with the project he calls 1,000 Artists. It begins with his train ride to D.C., he and artists of all kinds creating art along the way.
Because when people create, they become more innovative and reflective. And that's what I think America needs.
Perchin finds artistic inspiration in politics. Last summer, he took his creativity roadshow to the Republican convention in Tampa and the gathering of Democrats in Charlotte, North Carolina. He used scenes outside the convention centers to fill his canvas with images of the political frenzy. Perchin decided before the winner of last year's presidential election was known to repeat his art on the Mall during the inauguration of either President Obama or Mitt Romney. He says the project is bipartisan, but he does acknowledge most of the painters he knows are Democrats.
People don't usually associate the Republican Party with creativity and artistic discourse, and I don't want that stereotype to be true. I don't think it's helpful, and I want to encourage people of both parties to be involved in art making.
In 2009, some 2 million people turned out for President Obama's first inaugural. D.C. police are expecting less than half that many this time, and Perchin knows this time will be different.
I was going to give up on my 1,000 Artist project as I kind of watched history dissipate and hope dissipate. And then with some conversations with friends, I actually went to did a 180 and said, no, this is historical. This moment is historical.
4 years ago, Perchin and everyone else at the inauguration suffered through bitter cold. This time, he's hoping for friendlier weather.
We don't know if it's going to be raining or if it's going to be snowing or sleeting or just cold and windy like it was in 2009. In any case, we're going to find a way to create. And, you know, we're asking artists to kind of have plan A and plan B.
Perchin's aspiration is to have hundreds of professional and amateur artists on the mall Sunday and Monday, including anyone who feels motivated right there on the spot.
And, you know, we're going to have some extra art supplies with us, and we're going to have some extra white jumpsuits and orange hats so that any of you listening want to just come up and join us. Just find us. We'll have them.
Perchin says he and his fellow artists expect to be on the mall right around 10th Street, in case you know anyone who gets the creative urge to join them. If you want to see photos of Andrew Perchin's artwork from last year's political conventions and the 2009 presidential inauguration, go to our website, californiareport.org. More than 100 kids from the Coachella Valley are descending on Washington this weekend. They'll be taking part in Monday's inaugural parade. The kids are part of the Spirit of the Sands marching band from Palm Springs High School, and they're the only contingent from California in the entire parade. The band was chosen from 2,800 applicants. Bev Engelson has worked with this diverse group of students for 18 years.
I think the kids, they just envelop that real true spirit of, you know, what are they representing and what does music do? And what it does is it ties everybody together.
This is a school where 80% of the kids are below the poverty line. They've been playing around the Palm Springs area to raise money for the trip. Baritone player Abigail Cardenas says it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
I'm really excited about representing California and getting to go out there and show also what Palm Springs is about and how Palm Springs High School isn't just a place where, you know, we're just all fun and games in our band. We're serious. We really want to be recognized for how much we work.
You can see and hear the Palm Springs Band in the inaugural parade Monday, and they'll be performing this. Well, this isn't the last time you'll be hearing from me in Washington. I'm here through the inauguration next week. Tune in to the California Report or visit us at californiareport.org for our ongoing coverage. Well, that's our show from Washington, D.C. The California Report is a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director and producer in D.C. this week is Susie Racho. Back in San Francisco, Seal Muller is the technical producer. Our staff includes Victoria Malione, Ingrid Becker, John Brooks, Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, Don Clyde, and Nina Thorson. Many thanks to our special projects producer, Tina Lauerberg, and Robert Fraser, who helped us feel at home at Monitor Studios here in Washington this week. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation. With nomination information about the 2014 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards, available at www.irvine.org. The California Endowment. Health happens with prevention at calendow.org. And Chevron, committed to helping California grow by supporting small businesses and investing in education. More information available at chevron.com.